Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Chaos was the watchword in the Gaza Strip this weekend as ordinary Palestinians joined with armed members of President Yasser Arafat's own party to protest corruption and conflict at the heart of the Palestinian leadership. On Friday, Palestinian militants kidnapped four French aid workers and two Palestinian security officials, including the Gaza chief of police, only to release them hours later. On Saturday, Arafat replaced the head of Gaza security with his cousin, but was forced by popular outrage to reappoint a deposed chief a day later. And on Saturday, Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Koray tendered his resignation, citing unprecedented chaos in Gaza. As of tonight, that resignation stands, despite Arafat's call for Koray to continue. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is pushing to pull all Israeli settlers and soldiers out of Gaza next year. But who will lead the Palestinians? Tonight on Point, turmoil in the Gaza Strip and big questions over the future of Palestinian leadership. We begin in Jerusalem, where Christian Science Monitor Bureau Chief Eileen Prusher has been covering the story. Earlier today, I asked her if there's been any resolution to the chaotic weekend in Gaza.
It would be really premature at this point to say that there's a resolution yet, but we certainly see Yasser Arafat really trying to get himself out of the morass that he's in at the moment. One thing that has been a bit of surprise for people who watch this region closely is that the Prime Minister, Ahmed Koray, also known as Abu Allah, seemed quite serious about tendering his resignation and has not been convinced by Mr. Arafat to stay in his position, although the issue, is still a little bit up in the air. And another, of course, really major move on Mr. Arafat's part is that he did essentially go back on his appointment of his cousin Musa Arafat and put in Abdel Razak El Majaida in his place as the director of security for the Palestinian areas. And that, while some people would say, it's a little bit embarrassing to have to appoint somebody and then override it in a few days, on the other hand, Yasser Arafat seems to be responding on some level to the demands of the street, which are saying, we don't want to see, this sort of nepotism and cronyism that has really kind of colored the landscape in the Palestinian Authority for some time.
As of now, late Monday, is the Palestinian Prime Minister Ahmed Koray standing by his resignation? Has he quit?
He is standing by his resignation. However, in his last words to reporters, he said something to the effect that many ministers in the Palestinian cabinet are rejecting his resignation and trying to convince him to stay. That is being read as something of a, the story isn't over yet. And perhaps he could still come back and say that, he's doing it not just because Yasser Arafat convinced him, but that other Palestinian ministers did, or that it's for the good of the Palestinian people. So while the prime minister certainly has not retracted his resignation yet, nothing has been finalized as of this point.
Eileen Prusher, remind us of the elements of what you called near anarchy in Gaza and what the prime minister called chaos and lawlessness. What happened over this long and tumultuous weekend, and where did it come from?
It started on Friday when the police chief, Razi Jabali, was kidnapped, and then in the same afternoon, several French aid workers were kidnapped. All of them were released unharmed, but it seemed to unleash this sense of lawlessness that really has been brimming under the surface for some time.
In Gaza in particular.
In Gaza in particular, that's right. It also shows a sense of disconnection, really, from the heart of the Palestinian Authority's offices, which are now basically confined more or less to Ramallah, at least as far as offices that Mr. Arafat has any influence over. And Gaza, of course, Mr. Arafat hasn't really left Ramallah for 2 years now, following the almost four years of intifada with Israel. It really gives a sense of things kind of being unleashed, and there's, of course, a lot of reasons for that. I mean, there's an internal power struggle going on within the Fatah movement, which is Yasser Arafat's faction of the PLO, and there's been a splintering there for some time. What we're seeing now, really seems to indicate that some of the militant factions of the PLO, who call themselves the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, as well as some of the young and restless, you might call it, leadership, younger leadership within the Palestinian Liberation Organization, is probably fed up, you know, maybe also angry at Israel, but also disappointed in Yasser Arafat for not being able to have a real impact on the situation for some time now. These things have a way of snowballing, that once those kidnappings happened, they were followed by all sorts of angry protests and marches when Mr. Arafat tried to replace the police chief who was kidnapped, and I should add, not for the first time. And then Mr. Arafat, of course, replaced him with his cousin. You know, it's led to a sense of, you know, maybe some of these armed groups having more control over the street than Mr. Arafat's forces. So on the one hand, I think, you know, for things to change, the Palestinian Authority police forces and security forces will really have to work hard to sort of reassert their control over these areas. But that said, it's a difficult job to do, considering that Mr. Arafat is not in Gaza himself and not able to operate there anymore. So I think there really is a struggle here for who's in charge and who's going to be in charge in the future when the Israeli government decides to remove the settlements and soldiers, as it's promised to do within the next year.
What does all this anarchy over the weekend portend for that period when and if it actually pulls out all the settlers and soldiers? What lies ahead? Does the Palestinian Authority still have a sure claim on authority there, or could we see an entirely different group taking power in Gaza, even the West Bank as well?
It's difficult to say, but there have been a lot of estimations in recent months that as the Palestinian Authority has lost some ground in Gaza, that Hamas, the Islamic militant movement, has sort of been the winner in that zero-sum game and has really been gaining ground. Now, the interesting thing to point out is that actually the latest violence and sense of power struggle happening now in Gaza is really taking place within the PLO or within the Fatah movement. And that actually, even though Hamas has become more and more powerful, you know, Arafat's faction, the PLO, essentially a secular nationalist movement representing the Palestinian cause, that really does still represent the majority. But it's been a question, you know, what the future of it would be if, in fact, the Israelis withdrew from Gaza and Arafat were not there, or the PLO isn't there to sort of have a clear leader, that perhaps Hamas would take over. So you have really several factors at work here. There's also, I should mention, the top security chief in Gaza until recently, Mohammed Dahlan, who was really a kind of protege of Arafat. You know, he was considered to be a sort of natural leader in the future of Gaza. There seemed to be a real struggle right now between those young Palestinian militants who were sort of on the side of Dahlan as opposed to those who were, you know, supporting other more minor leaders. So I think there is a sense that there is a field that is going to be up for grabs in terms of control and resources in the next year, as it were, maybe a little bit more, however long it might take for Israel or for Prime Minister Ariel Sharon to fulfill his promises to withdraw from Gaza. So all of these factors, both the internal struggle plus the issue of Israel leaving eventually, have contributed to a sense of lack of clarity for where things are going to be in a year and really who will be in charge.
And finally, Eileen, the Israeli and American governments have said for some time that Yasser Arafat's time has passed. Are Palestinians, in effect, with this tumult over the weekend, saying the same thing?
I think most of the people watching this, be it the political analysts and journalists, could feel tempted to say so, but at the same time, a lot of the leaders in this region have been through troubled times and survived, and that certainly includes Prime Minister in Israel, Ariel Sharon, and certainly Arafat as well, and anyone who kind of writes their political epitaph early, sometimes ends up having to retract it. So I think it's not out of the realm of possibility that Arafat still could regain some ground, but I think it's going to be a very difficult job for him at this point. He's on difficult terms with the United Nations now. The Israelis haven't been speaking to him for quite a long time. He still does have some support among Palestinians, but they seem to see him as more of a symbol, a grandfather figure, and less of an effective effective leader. So I think it might be that this could be the beginning of the end, but that process of getting to the end or of possibly getting to a new Palestinian leadership, that could really be years in the making.
Eileen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Eileen Prusher is Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor. She spoke with me from Jerusalem. We're talking tonight about the latest unrest in Gaza and the future of Palestinian leadership. What is the meaning of the Palestinian on Palestinian violence in the Gaza Strip? How do you interpret the swell in chaos, the lawlessness, the protests against Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Authority? And if Arafat should step away from power, who will lead the Palestinians? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from San Francisco is George Bisharat, a professor at University of California's Hastings School of the Law. He has worked as a consultant for the Palestinian Legislative Council, drafting a legal framework for the Palestinian government. Good evening and welcome, George Bisharat.
Thanks very much. A pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you. Give us your interpretation of what we've seen over this weekend. What is unfolding here?
I think there are a number of different things going on, but the most important thing, I think, to grasp about the situation is that it really represents the acute frustration of the Palestinians who have been pressing for reform for a number of years now. Long before others, such as the Americans and other outsiders, began to press for reform, Palestinians themselves had become discontent with the operation of the Palestinian Authority. Back in the mid to late 90s, there were movements within the Palestinian Legislative Council to bring an end to the corruption, to the cronyism and the like that was characteristic of the Palestinian Authority's operations. And we're simply, nothing concrete has really been achieved. And we're seeing the accumulated frustrations over those failures.
But where do those frustrations point? To what outcome here?
Well, I agree with your previous speaker that it's very hard to predict. I think that we're going to probably be seeing a situation of continued chaos and lawlessness. It may not reach the high point that it did this past weekend. But I think, you know, this is a situation that's characteristic not only of Gaza, but also actually of the West Bank. Essentially, Palestinian society has devolved into what anthropologists used to refer to as an acephalous society, a headless society. It's not, of course, coincidental that it has. I think it has been a deliberate plan on the part of the Sharon government to decapitate Palestinian political society, to render it, basically to destroy any capacity for Palestinian self-government. When Israel reinvaded the West Bank in 2002, it devastated all of the institutions of the Palestinian Authority, many of them with absolutely no military consequence. So I think what we're seeing is the consequence of that long-term trend to essentially destroy the Palestinian Authority and render the Palestinians helpless to resist what's essentially an ongoing program of absorption of much of the West Bank.
If indeed that's the agenda of some, can it work? Or are Palestinians going to organically keep pushing up a leadership, even if a lot of their infrastructure, whether from Israeli intervention or their own corruption, is destroyed?
Well, the Palestinian people have incredible strength and determination and stoicism, and they'll need all of those things in the coming months and years, I'm afraid. I don't think that there's anything standing in the way of further Israeli moves to absorb parts of the West Bank, with the possible exception, I think one positive development from the Palestinian side that I think they can point to with some degree of optimism and hope, and that's the recent decision of the International Court of Justice regarding the separation barrier that Israel has been building in the West Bank.
Saying change its course so it doesn't impinge so much on Palestinian lands and villages and so on.
Well, that's kind of what the Israeli High Court said, but what the International Court of Justice said was that any part of the wall essentially that is built in the West Bank would be in violation of international law, and therefore the parts of it that are built within the occupied territories violate international law, have to be dismantled, and Palestinians are due compensation for damages that they've suffered to this point by the partial construction of the wall.
George Fischerratt, stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about turmoil in the Gaza Strip and big questions over the future of Palestinian leadership. We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about chaos in Gaza and the future of Palestinian leadership. You can join the conversation. What's behind the Palestinian Authority's loss of control, corruption, and failed leadership? Israeli pressure and occupation. Could the future of Palestinian leadership be Islamist? Could it be Hamas? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been talking with George Bisharat, professor at the University of California's Hastings School of the Law and occasional legal consultant to the Palestinian Legislative Council. Earlier today, I spoke with Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, head of the Palestinian National Initiative. He is a leader in pushing for a more active Palestinian democracy. He joined me from Ramallah in the West Bank. I asked Mustafa Barghouti how he interpreted what Prime Minister Ahmed Korea has described as chaos in the Palestinian Authority.
It is a true description that there is chaos and there is lawlessness, but Mr. Korea should have gone further and said that this is an outcome of the fact that there hasn't been real reform within the Palestinian context, and he should have called for elections. I think the main problem in Palestine is that we did not have had elections since 1996, and the existing legislative council has finished its term long time ago in 1999. We didn't have municipality elections since 1976. 80% of the people who live in Palestine now were born after that date. So in my opinion, there is a crisis, and this crisis can only be resolved through free democratic elections. Without elections, we cannot have real reform. And reform does not happen by changing one corrupt officer with another or by changing one prime minister with another from the same clique that has been in government for such a long time.
And what tensions, what problems has this absence of reform of elections produced?
It has produced strong dismay on the side of Palestinians because the authority has failed in two ways. One way is that they failed to bring peace that they promised to Oslo, and also they failed to provide proper governance, which led to problems of corruption, mismanagement, etc., etc. Now people feel that we've started to succeed through the decision of the International Court of Justice, which decided that the Israeli-built wall is illegal and must be removed and opened the road for sanctions on Israel if it continues its occupation and wall and so on. And people are very upset that the authority, instead of concentrating on these issues, is having a situation where people are fighting with each other for an authority that is really without sovereignty. It's an authority under full military occupation, Israeli occupation. So there is a feeling that many people in the authority are concerned with their own personal interest rather than the general public interest.
Does this unrest indicate that Yasser Arafat may soon be finished as leader of the Palestinians or not?
The issue here is not only Mr. Arafat. Even if Mr. Arafat is not there, and we don't have a proper system, the situation will be even worse. Because now we have Arafat, who has a leader and who runs things in an autocratic manner, but at the same time he carries certain national symbolism in himself, and there are certain limitations that he doesn't cross. You could have another autocrat sitting there without all this national aspect, and the situation will be worse. In my opinion, the issue is not substituting Mr. Arafat with another one. The issue is about changing the whole system. We cannot change the whole system to represent the Palestinian people in a proper way without democracy, without elections. Many countries in the world have gone through the same crisis. And if democracy in Czechoslovakia or in France or in the United States means free democratic elections, then democracy in Palestine means the same, free democratic elections.
How do you think the handover of the Gaza Strip, promised by Ariel Sharon, will affect Palestinian self-government?
There is no handover. This is an illusion that Sharon has created, and unfortunately many people have been cheated with that. The truth is that Israel is not planning a handover. Israel is planning the transformation of Gaza Strip into a huge, big prison where Palestinians will be enclaved by Israeli military presence from all directions, having no passage by air, water, or land to any other country. And in my opinion, Israel is using that to cover up for the building of the wall in the West Bank and the annexation of no less than 58% of the West Bank and the process of destruction of two-state solution, which means destruction for the potential for peace.
There's talk of the high potential for more chaos in Palestinian areas, even civil war. Where do you think things are headed as we talk this evening, Mr. Baghouti?
I hope that the Palestinian social fabric will not allow civil war. About a year ago, some people were advocating a similar situation to go into a civil war, but it never happened. And I don't think this will happen. And I do hope that this crisis will open the road for true and real reform. And we hope that the international community will finally make up its mind and help us have free democratic elections. What Palestine needs is democracy, not a dictatorship.
Mustafa Barghouti, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Mustafa Barghouti, head of the Palestinian National Initiative. He spoke with me earlier from Ramallah in the West Bank. We're talking tonight about turmoil in the Gaza Strip over this last weekend and in some parts ongoing, raising big questions over the future of Palestinian leadership. We've been joined from San Francisco by George Bisharat, professor of law at the University of California's Hastings School of the Law. We're joined now from Washington by Martin Indyk, director of the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution and former U.S. ambassador to Israel from 1995 to 97 and again from 2000 to 2001. Ambassador Indyk, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
How are you reading the unrest over the weekend? Is this the beginning of the end for Yasser Arafat?
I do believe it's the beginning of something, and it may indeed the beginning of the end of Yasser Arafat's power. And that is the critical distinction that I think needs to be understood here, that Arafat still enjoys support amongst the Palestinian people as the symbol of their struggle for independence. Mm. But he is widely recognized by the Palestinian people as having failed them in his government. In his taking over of control of Gaza and 42% of the West Bank under the Oslo process and taking responsibility for negotiating a two-state solution, he failed them, and he led them to a complete disaster. The people are not aware or forget that the Intifada, when it broke out 3.5 years ago, was a revolt not only against Israeli occupation, but also against Arafat's corrupt rule. But as long as he was being humiliated by Ariel Sharon and put in the Mukati's headquarters in two rooms and so on, naturally the Palestinians identified with him and supported him. But what they didn't support was his corrupt kleptocracy that he had imposed on them. And they haven't been prepared up until this moment to revolt against his rule. And now we see the beginning of that revolt. And I think that that's why this moment is different from other previous moments.
And what's brought the different character here? Is it because of what may be an Israeli withdrawal from the Gaza Strip next year? Is that what's pushing a different chemistry this time?
I do think that that has proved to be a forcing action, in the sense that with the expectation that Israel will evacuate settlements and pull out the army from Gaza, that there's a process of kind of preparing for the struggle for power, for who will fill the vacuum. And that has increased the tension between the various competitors, particularly within Arafat's base, his Fatah organization, which is in effect the ruling party in the Palestinian Authority. And the institutions of the Palestinian Authority in Gaza have essentially collapsed over the last 3 years. And what's left are these security chiefs who have become reviled by the people because they're just living off the people and they're extraordinarily corrupt. Ghazi Jabali, who was kidnapped the other day by some of these protesters, it's a man who is widely to be a child rapist and runs prostitution rings, And yet he's the security chief in Gaza. He was until Arafat was forced to dismiss him 2 days ago.
George Bisharat, join us for a second. We've got a hound on the loose at Martin Indyk's house.
No, he's not at my house.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, that was my dog.
Oh, it's yours. Okay. Somebody grab that mutt. What do you make of that analysis of what's going on right now among the Palestinians, George?
Well, I agree with much of it, although I think it's important to emphasize that this is accumulated frustration over a number of years of struggle for reform that began, as I said, indigenously, that is, without outside pressure.
Right.
In the mid to late 90s, the Palestinians were already sounding the drum for reform, and here we are 7 years later with the Palestinian Authority in shambles and the situation not a lot different.
And as Martin Indyk says, the Intifada itself at the beginning, having reform as one of its goals or one of the sort of incendiary factors behind it.
Well, I think, yes, I think there was a sense in which the violent aspects of the Intifada were really in defiance of Yasser Arafat. They were a challenge to him. And he was riding a wild bronco through much of it.
I want to turn to our callers. Tariq is calling from Brooklyn, New York. Hi, Tariq. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Well, thanks.
I couldn't agree with what Mr. Bisharat was saying, that in part all this that's happening, all this civil unrest that's happening among the Palestinians in the occupied territories, in large part is due to the Israeli occupation and, its pressures on Palestinian society and the Palestinian infrastructure. And I am in favor of democratic elections that include all of the leadership of the PLO as well as the rejectionist front. And when the Palestinians, I'm not sure if they're already doing this now, but this is from my point of view, from my side, if the Palestinians are already considering the national consensus, they shouldn't just consider the national consensus defined by borders, but rather by identity. And I think that the Palestinian national consensus should also include Palestinians within Israel in the areas of 1948. And it should also include the Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, in Jordan, and in Syria.
That could be a pretty unwieldy polity, but we hear you pointing again to democracy and a vote. Martin Indyk, we heard the same urging earlier from Mustafa Barghouti. What about the polls as a way out of this confusion or conflict over leadership? Is that a realistic solution?
Well, it's part of the solution, and I think it can be a very important legitimizing function. But here, it's really a question of when the elections are going to be held and what kind of elections will be held. I think at this time, while Israel is still, as a result of its measures against the Intifada and the terrorism, is really essentially in occupation of Palestinian cities and towns across the West Bank and also controlling much of Gaza, it's very hard to have a free and open election contest in which people are able to travel and come out and vote. And the circumstances will be quite difficult. But it could start with elections in Fatah. Fatah is, as I said, the ruling party,
mm-hmm.
and it is essentially the institution from which the Palestinian Authority draws its authority. And basically the Abus, all of these people in the Palestinian Authority leadership who are regarded as corrupt, are from Fatah. And there hasn't been an election in Fatah since 1986. And the reason for that is because this young guard that is now rebelling is a great threat to the Abus, to this old guard.
This is Mohammed Dahlan and so on.
Yes, not just him, though. There's mm-hmm. a lot of young guard people out there who have fought in the Intifada and who want a share of power, who have legitimacy because they fought Israel, but they're shut out of the Fatah institutions. And so I think immediately, if there were Fatah elections, there would be a chance to bring the young guard into positions of authority and then you could prepare the way for municipal elections and then elections for the authority itself.
Can you imagine the kind of turmoil that we saw over this weekend encouraging Yasser Arafat or someone, anyone else with the authority to pull it off, to call elections within Fatah? Might that be a response?
Well, I think Arafat is basically fighting to retain his power. One of his advisors said to me that, he said, you know that there are only two kinds of Arab leaders, those that have all power concentrated in their hands and those who are dead. And that's certainly Yasser Arafat's view of things. So he will not easily give up power. If he goes for elections, it will be because he's calculated that he can manipulate the elections in a way that will preserve his power. He will not go quietly into the night. He will not allow a process to take place which in effect strips him of power. The only way in which I think that things are likely to develop positively is if the people, the Palestinian people, make absolutely clear that they're not going to take it anymore. And he basically has no choice but to get rid of this corrupt kleptocracy and empower a prime minister who has legitimacy, who's not Abu Ala or one of the old guard, but has legitimacy in his own right because he's clean. Somebody like Salam Fayyad, the Minister of Finance, who is a reformer, who doesn't have the record of the old guard, and who would have some legitimacy amongst the people in a kind of provisional government that would clean out these people and allow a process to begin that could lead to an election and a new legitimization process.
George Bisharat, do you feel in the pressure of the protests that we saw over this weekend the kind of lever that might be exactly what Martin Indyk's describing, the Palestinian people demanding a cleanup, demanding some kind of election, if only within Fatah? Is this the stuff of that demand?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, there have been these pressures for years. And in fact, the Palestinian Authority announced some months ago that there would be municipal elections held this coming year, this year, in November. So it had already responded to those pressures in that particular fashion. Now, it remains to be seen whether they follow through and actually conduct the elections. I agree with Mr. Indyk that it is difficult to hold elections under military occupation, and that's yet another reason that Israeli troops should be encouraged to withdraw from the Palestinian area so that actual democratic elections can be held.
And that may be on the docket for Gaza next year. So is that a prescription for elections and success or more turmoil?
Well, it depends, of course, on how it's done. And I suppose I share Mustafa Barghouti's skepticism about whether that withdrawal actually takes place or not.
Whether it even takes place.
Yes.
He was saying they'll withdraw to the borders and treat it, in his words, like one big prison.
True.
But that's still a withdrawal.
It is. And it remains to be seen whether the political wherewithal exists within Israel even to accomplish that.
It certainly does. Ariel Sharon fighting for that this evening. Martin Indyk, George Bisharat, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about turmoil in the Gaza Strip and big questions over the future of Palestinian leadership. You can join the conversation tonight. If Arafat should go or step away from power, who will lead the Palestinians? And what's behind the Palestinian Authority's apparent loss of control? Could the future of Palestinian leadership be Islamist? Could it be Hamas? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about turmoil in the Gaza Strip and big questions over the future of Palestinian leadership. We're joined tonight from Washington by Martin Indyk, director of the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution and former United States ambassador to Israel. And from San Francisco by George Bisharat, professor of law at the University of California's Hastings School of Law. He has been a consultant with the Palestinian Legislative Council on its Law on Independence of the Judiciary in 98 and its draft penal code in 2003. You can join our conversation tonight. If Arafat should go or step away from power, who will lead the Palestinians? What should Washington be doing now? What is Israel's responsibility here? What must the Palestinians do for themselves? And what can the world do to encourage new and better Palestinian leadership? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Susan is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment on the opinion expressed by Professor Basharat and Mr. Barghouti that somehow the current situation is the fault of Israel and the Sharon government. My opinion is that this is a good excuse. The Palestinian leadership really hasn't taken advantage of the time since Oslo to create a structure for the good of the people. I believe that one reason Hamas is popular is because they're the ones who are building hospitals and who are taking charge of social welfare programs. The thing that can be done is to really look at what is good for the people and allow the political issues to be negotiated.
Of course, that's not all Hamas is doing, but you're saying in spite of Israeli occupation and steps that have been pretty tough on the Palestinians, you don't see a line of responsibility leading there.
I truly don't. One of the ideas of Oslo was to give the Palestinians time to govern themselves. One reason the Israelis went back in after the Palestinian Authority supposedly took over was because of incursions into Israel by misguided individuals from the West Bank and Gaza.
Susan, we've got it. Let us pick it up. Thanks for your call, George Basharat. How about it? How do you apportion responsibility here? Clearly, Palestinians themselves saying we've got ineptitude and we've got nepotism, and in Martin Indyk's words, we've got a kleptocracy here. They're shouting at themselves. On the other hand, it's not hard to find Israelis. I'm just looking here at Haaretz today, columnist Danny Rubenstein saying, Israel, quoting him, Israel has done everything to bring about the collapse of the PA. So how do you apportion responsibility?
I'm not sure whether it's possible or even important to apportion it in some percentage sort of figure. There's no question, however, that the Palestinian leadership has much to answer for to its own people. At the same time, it is indisputable that the Palestinian Authority has essentially been destroyed in not just in an institutional sense, but in a physical sense through the reinvasion of 2002 and raids both before and after that time, and the raids went and the destruction went far beyond that which was necessary or justified by any attempts to curb terror. In fact, on one occasion when the Israeli military bombed a Palestinian Authority jail in Nablus, an individual who had previously been accused of attacks against Israel escaped and was able to commit further attacks following that. So I think that the Israeli government has very artfully used the war on terror, the so-called war on terror, as a means of guising an ongoing program of a twin program of destroying any Palestinian capacity for self-government and consolidating its own control over much of the area of the West Bank.
Martin Indyk, if you could pick up the same issue, of course, we're hearing from Palestinians and everyone tonight that the Palestinians themselves need to take responsibility here, and yet there's often this charge, either a broad charge of Israel destroying certainly physical infrastructure or this kind of niggling fear that some elements in Israel don't want the Palestinians to succeed. What do you think? How do you pick this apart?
Well, I was on the front lines for the first year of the Intifada. I was still ambassador in Israel during that time, so I had an opportunity to see it up very close. And I think that what people forget in looking back at that time is that the Israeli government of Ariel Sharon did not send the army into the West Bank to, as it were, reoccupy for a full 18 months. For the first year, I was working with Sharon in those days as the ambassador. He was trying to get us and using the Israeli army as a form of pressure on the Palestinian Authority and on Yasser Arafat directly to get him to stop the terrorism and violence.
Israel absorbed a lot of damage during those months.
And that's exactly the point, is that he held back from that reinvasion, as it were, in the hope that he could put pressure on Arafat, and we would put pressure on Arafat to get him to stop the violence and terrorism. And Arafat, I think it was George who described him as riding the wild bronco or riding the tiger, both didn't want to stop it because he was trying to gain some political advantage and feared that if he tried to stop it, he would be defied and his authority, lack of authority, would be exposed. And so it got to the point where the terrorism got completely out of hand. You can remember the Passover massacre and
yes, we do.
Bombing day after day of these suicide bombings that just put the Israelis and not just the government in a situation where they said, this has got to stop.
But look forward then, if you can, Martin Indyk. If the Palestinians now have some kind of transition to make at some point, how can Israel position itself to be supportive of that? How might it position itself to be unsupportive or even destructive of a successful transition or emergence of a better government there?
Well, there's no doubt that they can play a negative role. It's not clear to me that they can play a positive role. I think that both Israel and, for that matter, the United States and other outside parties at this point should stay out of it. This is between the Palestinians, and it's up. There's an opportunity for the Palestinians to express their own feelings and demands here. And any outside intervention, particularly from Israel, will only complicate matters and give Arafat the opportunity to say, you know, you're doing Israel's work. This is some Israeli conspiracy. And use that to try to regain power. So I think it's really important not to take away from the fact that this is an internal Palestinian issue and the Palestinians should be left to deal with it on their own. The second thing that the Israelis can and should do is to get out of Gaza as soon as possible. I don't agree with George's analysis there that there's no intention of pulling out or that it won't happen. I think it will happen. I think there will be a national unity government in Israel that will give Sharon the support, and that will be important because Gazans will then have the opportunity, hopefully within 6 to 9 months, and no longer than that, to govern themselves. Israel will be out of their lives, the settlers will be out of their lives, and that will be an opportunity for the reformers to come forward, backed by the international community, with Egypt playing a lead role there, in a way that I think could has the possibility of a new leadership for the Palestinians in Gaza, which could then serve as a kind of springboard to reform in the West Bank as well.
A chance to show what they can do. There's a hopeful scenario. Neil's on the line. Hi, Neil. You're on the air.
Hi again.
Hi.
I wanted to pick up on a thread from previous calls on a previous topic you had on democracy in the Palestinian public.
Okay.
Taking a historical perspective, I see this as a continuum. In my reading, the first intifada was an uprising of the Palestinians against the hypocrisy of the Arab world, even more than against Israel. With stones and Molotov cocktails, I think they shook off their cynical overlords at that time and stung Israel a little bit.
And what about this time, this weekend?
The second intifada was squarely against Israel, and I think it traumatized Israel at least as much as the Yom Kippur War. Now, on this one, I don't know if it'll be as violent as the two previous intifadas, but I think it has the same tone in which they're declaring their independence from the cronyism of the Palestinian Authority. And Arafat is not so much a leader as a surfer, and I don't see how he can surf his way through this wave.
So this time the energy turns around to look squarely at Yasser Arafat, and it's a good question whether or not he can survive it. Neil, thanks for your call. Let's get another call. David's calling from San Francisco. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm right here in the same town. But I've had something else to add to the mix. In the past couple of years, my reading of the newspaper shows me there's been literally hundreds of Hamas activists who've been killed with various targeted assassinations from helicopters, from bombings and the like.
I don't have the number, but it's been a lot, yes.
There's been a lot. Now, it seems to me that it's likely that, and going all the way down to the neighborhood level in the Gaza, certainly, and it seems to me that young activists coming along, a new generation of young activists who want to live, to join the struggle, are not going to so much then be going to Hamas and perhaps they're secular anyway, but begin to organize organizes the grassroots, organize independent entities of the grassroots. They have the the image of another Begruti who got sentenced to 29 life terms. An image of a secular Palestine, young Palestine revolutionary to look up to, and I wonder if that could be happening too. Why put your head on the line and be riding around in your car and get blown up when in fact you can continue organizing from the grassroots from the bottom up and survive for a while?
Well, let us pick it up, David, and thanks for your call from San Francisco. Martin Indyk, what about Hamas and its role here and how it might emerge, how it's being seen as people assess or reassess Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Authority?
Well, I don't think that the Palestinians who are out in the streets now protesting against Yasser Arafat's rule are about to welcome Hamas to take over instead. Hamas enjoys about 30% support in Gaza. Its normal level of support is much lower than that. It's through the Intifada and the despair that has been generated here that they've gained greater support. But they don't have majority support amongst the people. The vast majority of Palestinians are secular and nationalist. They're not. And so I think that Hamas is certainly watching and waiting, wants to have a share in power once the Israelis withdraw from Gaza. But if there's a more legitimate leadership that emerges in place of Arafat and his corrupt cronies, then I think Hamas will actually go down in popularity.
And George Bisharat, how about it? Do you see the same Hamas as ultimately a marginal player despite its degree of organization and its heightened popularity during the Intifada?
Well, it will always hold a certain degree of legitimacy, I think, among a number of Palestinians. But I fundamentally agree with Mr. Indyk that most Palestinians are secular and nationalist, and I would add strongly support democratic values. I do think we should take note of the emergence of the Palestinian National Initiative, which was founded by Mustafa Barghouti and a number of other prominent Palestinian personalities who have reputations for incorruptibility and who command great respect, people such as Hanan Ashrawi and Haider Abdeshafi and others. And this is an organization which is supporting democracy and transparency and responsible government and is trying to offer an alternative between the corrupt politics of the Palestinian Authority on the one hand and the religiously oriented politics of the Islamists on the other. So I think this is a very important development and one which I think we should examine closely and support.
Martin Indyk, we've just got half a minute left, but how might it happen that this restlessness, this unhappiness in the streets could turn into real change, could turn out the Abus, the cronies? What's the power ratio can that happen?
Well, I think it really depends. Mohammed Dahlan was quoted in the New York Times the other day in a very interesting article as saying there are two ways of changing the government, Palestinian government, either through revolution or through elections. The Palestinian people are not known to be revolutionaries. Well, actually, the PLO considers itself a revolutionary movement, but in terms of getting rid of their leaders, it's very rare. So the real question here is whether the people will throw off that history, will actually sustain the protests in a way that makes it impossible for Arafat to continue along this line. And that's, I think, what we have to watch. To what extent this really becomes a popular uprising against Yasser Arafat and the Abus. If that is the case, then he will have to cede power to people who are cleaner, who have greater legitimacy.
And we'll be watching exactly for that. Martin Indyk, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Martin Indyk, former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, and George Bisharat, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point.